Talk given Saturday, 20th November, 1971. You may recollect that last time we touched upon certain very important points. The nature of pure mind. Pure mind, which is a universal creative energy. It is not particular. It is immeasurable, and it has no dimensions whatsoever. This pure mind embodies in itself all the laws of the Spirit, all the absolute commandments, so to say. Its realm is the realm of the immortal, of the eternal. It is utterly free of all causation. It has nothing to do with causation. It is the creative power of transcendence, and is the real meaning of the phrase thought power. What we call thought is merely discursive speech. And discursive speech lies within the realm of duality, whereas pure mind is concerned only with transcendence. As such, it is creative. It is creative power. It is creation. There is no difference between the two. It is not a case of the creative power producing creation, but creative power is identical with creation. And since its context is the context of the eternal, the timeless, the spaceless, that which is not measurable, has no quantities involved in it, no beginnings, no endings, that is free of anything which we in our little way understand by the word karma. Now you may recollect, we also touched upon this other point. This energy, pure mind, this transcendent energy, when it meets that other energy, which is the manifested universe, which we understand as matter and as body, in that meeting, when the body consists of individuals called human beings, there emerges psyche. The phenomenon which is psyche is personal. It lies in the realm of duality. Psyche is special to you yourself. It's your psyche. And it is rooted in the physical body itself. Particularly brain, nerves, glands, blood, and the functioning of the senses. It is this which gives rise to psyche. And all that is called our karma as such is embodied in this realm of psyche.
No, that way. Otherwise it'll go out.
all those living forces which are embodied in the psyche, embedded, I should say, rather than embodied, which are embedded in the psyche, are the forces which work out in our lives, releasing the pattern of our everyday life. Now remember, they are living forces. They are not fixed debit credit accounts. They keep changing as we change all the time. And in this realm of the psyche, which belongs to the space-time world, there is the becoming process which has a time direction, and therefore we interpret our lives in terms of cause and effect, which actually is an inadequate interpretation. It is not at all easy to see this. We are so conditioned to believe in causation. So much evidence is produced to support the idea of causation that for us to see that the actual process goes right beyond causation. The actual process is a creative process all along the line. But we, being what we are, bound by our ignorance, our incapacity to perceive, bound by the play of our desires, our beliefs, and so on, are unable to see our life from instant to instant as a continuous creative process. And in this is our bondage. If we are aware of our existence as a perpetual creative process, perpetual in the sense of timelessness, not in the sense of the continuity of time, if we can see our life like that, then there is no bondage for us. Of course, the question will arise, but pleasure and pain, problems, difficulties, joy, sorrow, all those arise obviously, or shall I say apparently obviously, as the consequence of this, that and the other. Apparently it is so because the mind, conditioned as it is, has no option but to interpret it in that way. This is the crux of the matter. When that inward freedom is realized, when the mind is utterly open, pure, then one is aware of the whole process in quite a different way. Now do remember that the process will involve inevitably what we call pleasure, pain. Inevitably. And its psychical correspondent, joy, sorrow. It will inevitably involve all that because the organism is so constituted that it must have this pleasure-pain mechanism at play for its survival. Where then lies the freedom? It lies in your mode of awareness, your mode of consciousness. What is it that realizes liberation? Not the body, the psyche. It is in the psyche that complete liberation can take place, not in the body. And this is a matter of our mode of consciousness, our mode of awareness of our total existence. This is the whole story of spiritual growth and development and fulfillment as man. It is not too difficult to see this intellectually. It is difficult enough, but it is not too difficult. It is not beyond our intellects. But to realize it in consciousness itself is quite a different matter. So, this freedom lies within consciousness. Nowhere else. The karma which works itself out, as we say, which lies in our psyche and which is continually being added to by the process of life from moment to moment every day, that karma cannot be dealt with directly by us as we are. We talk in terms of past karma, which has to be worked out now, which is working out now. Some of it will get left over and be worked out in a future. Now, this is a hopelessly inadequate way of looking at the whole situation. In a universe where everything is undergoing transformation, you cannot allocate space-time contexts in which this particular energy or force will work out thus and that particular force will work out thus. It does nothing of the sort. Awareness, consciousness is only now, here now, not in the future, not in the past. The terms past and future are convenient ways of talking. That is all. But apart from their being convenient ways of talking, they are no reality for our consciousness as we are here and now. The whole of the past is present right now, immediately. The whole of that past has worked into the now. It's a living thing which, undergoing transformation, at this moment is what I am, what you are. So there's no past karma waiting to be worked out, like bills which have not been paid for 6 months or 10 months or 10 years, as the case may be. It's not like that at all. This living person, yourself or myself, as I am at the moment, and that which has emerged out of the total past, and it is this ill conception with which we are conditioned, which burdens us with the idea, oh, it's my past karma I've got to work out, and this, that, and the other. You see what I'm getting at? Be aware, be wholly conscious now. Because in the now is embodied the total past. And in being wholly aware of the now, that energy which in transcendence includes what we commonly call past, present and future, will all come within awareness now, within pure awareness, whole awareness, total awareness, not within discriminative consciousness. Discriminative consciousness separates out past, present, future and so forth. But in pure awareness, which is the nature of pure mind, the mind of God, as the theistic religions would put it, that mind knows no past, present, future. As it was in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be. That is the verbal form in which it has been put. You get it? So you see, in the intensity of attention, of consciousness now, is that inward freedom, which is the state of purity, a purity which is truly transcendence itself. And it's a power that transforms this here, which is mortal, and which appears to go through the whole of the becoming process. When you are aware in terms of the immortal, of that which is apparent as a mortal becoming process, you are free. The purpose of your existence as an individual has been completely and totally fulfilled, because that awareness cannot hold unless you are totally related to the whole world as such, and also within your own psychophysical being, you are a harmonious whole. You see, man's freedom is an unconditioned freedom. It is not a case of being free because this, that or the other. There is no because involved in it. Because man is transcendence embodied. And transcendence is completely beyond anything like causation. There are no credit debit accounts in transcendence. Now do realize, there is no such thing as I can do what I please for God or for transcendence. Transcendence or God or the Absolute or Pure Mind or whatever, Brahman or Atma, whatever name you like to use, is totally unable. Curious thing to say, but I'll say it, totally unable to live by I do what I like to do. The whole question of like and dislike belongs solely to the realm of consciousness functioning in terms of duality, therefore conflict. You see, it takes a very, very great deal to get disentangled from all the conditioning that has been put upon us. All the influences that have been brought to bear upon us from the time we are born, through our upbringing, through our so-called education, through our study, research, and all the rest of it, all that conditioning ties up our awareness. And it is not free to be intelligent in the true sense, which means to be able to perceive immediately in the now the whole truth of what actually is present. We don't see it. What we see is the activity of our discriminative consciousness, which utilizes the concepts with which we have been filled and conditioned in order to interpret the immediate now. The immediate now is transcendent, it is total. It is not particular, it is not finite, it is not mortal. It is we, because of our blindness, our ignorance, introduce the elements of mortality, therefore of duality, therefore of pain and conflict and misery and all the rest of it. And it is this way that we introduce all those elements into the life of the psyche, our psychical processes, which makes us say, oh, this is the karmic process. You remember last time we talked a good deal about karma and its real meaning. Its root is kri, the Sanskrit root kri, which means to create. And do remember, creation, creative power, has nothing to do with all our limitations and so forth. Now, does this sound as if it is, oh, so totally beyond poor little me? It is. It is wholly here now. Let us look at it. Approach it this way. The inner teaching of the Kabbalah, which is the root of the whole Judeo-Christian tradition and of the Middle East as a whole, and the whole inner teaching of what is called the original Veda, which deals with, which is the Indian and Far Eastern teaching. The two are identical. There are certain differences in formulation. It rests with us today, in our day and age, to be free of the obscuration caused by different formulations and realize the one inner reality. What in India has been called Brahman Atma is identical with Yahweh Elohim of the Kabbalah. Now, let's look into this. Doesn't matter if you can't grasp it intellectually, just let the mind be quiet, happily quiet, and watchful. Elohim is the embodied presentation of Yahweh. Yahweh is the infinite, the Ein Sof, the incomprehensible absolute. You may, if you like, instead of absolute, say incomprehensible deity. That is Yahweh. But Yahweh, which is transcendence, interacting with itself, releases the extraordinary phenomenon of container and contained in the one single embodiment, and that is named Elohim. The name Elohim is made up of Ele and Me, and the Me becomes Him. It's interchanged when the two are combined together. Ele is the eternal what. Me is the eternal who. And neither of them can have any separate existence as such. The two are in complete and eternal interaction, which is, as I have said again and again, a timeless conjugation, therefore perpetually creative. Now, if you look at Genesis, you will find, particularly in chapter 1, that it is always Elohim which is the creative power. Now, notice how it is put in Genesis. It is translated into English by the word God, which is really quite inadequate. And Elohim said, let there be light, and there was light. Now remember what Elohim stands for, the eternal who and the eternal what in timeless conjugation. Elohim said, obviously Elohim is not a particular person who speaks the Hebrew language. The word said is the word which means conceived, thought, creative power in action. That is the primordial meaning of conception, creative power in action. Elohim, being creative, and there is the phenomenon which we call light. That is that, in fact, it is a transcendent reality which we call light. So you see, Elohim is the supreme expression of power in action, of thought power. And this is the profound and deep meaning of thought. Not our discursive logical speech. Elohim said, Yahweh hasn't come into the story yet. It comes in chapter 2. Yahweh Elohim doesn't come alone by himself. Yahweh never does come alone by himself. He's always in association with Elohim or through Elohim somehow. And Elohim said, let us make man in our own image. In his own image made he man, male, female, each single man. Elohim, the word Elohim also includes the, not a duality, but two in oneness, eternal who, eternal what, in timeless conjugation. And man was made that. Now the word man, from its root, means the thinker. The thinker not in the sense of the discursive talker, but the creator. So you see, what you and I are, we are no less than Elohim. Creative, we are creative power actually, which is just locked up here. And the release of that creativeness takes place only when awareness is completely liberated, completely free. Don't for a moment think, therefore, that some wonderful culmination will come one day, there'll be complete liberation, and then whatsoever I think will immediately come into being. Nothing of the sort will happen. That thinking and that coming into being is something which is utterly inconceivable. That which lies in the realm of transcendence can never be thought of. That is to say, it can never be pictured. Any picture, any discriminative perception, any objective perception is necessarily limited, finite, mortal. But this mysterious reality of transcendence is right within us. It is our fundamental, essential nature. Eckhart said outright, man really is God. God really is man. Now, he couldn't have spoken more unequivocally. That's an absolute statement. You see? Now look at the Vedic tradition. In the earliest of the Upanishads, one of the earliest of the Upanishads, the Brihadaranyaka, which is the greatest of the Upanishads, it is stated in the beginning, this world was Atma only in the form of a person. It is rather unfortunate that we have to use these words when we translate. In the beginning, Genesis does the same, and they are mistranslations. Genesis, it ought to be translated, out of the unknown origin, Bereshit. Out of the unknown origin, Bara Elohim, God created Elohim. Emerged Elohim. And then there is the separation of heaven and earth through Elohim. It's a story of awareness, consciousness. Your consciousness and my consciousness. Similarly here, in the beginning, in the state in which there was no finite, limited representation of anything, there was only that infinite, absolute, unconditioned Atma. Now, this is what we have to see very clearly. This statement doesn't refer to something prior to us in time. It doesn't. If and when you, yourself, or I myself can enter that transcendent awareness, the supreme state which is the culmination of all meditation, then your discriminative consciousness and mine have utterly ceased to function. Your or my self-consciousness, which isolates me from totality, has vanished altogether. I'm no longer conscious in those terms. In fact, I am not conscious at all. the one total transcendent reality has come to fruition in terms of that type of awareness through me or you, the psychophysical being. This is the thing that all the theologies have failed to present. Professional theologians don't see this. Even if they succeed in getting an intellectual formulation which is very near it, it needs actual realization. Then you know, absolutely, this is so. You don't argue about it after that. So you see, these statements were made by men, people like yourself, like myself. So now, agre asit, agre in the beginning, as it is usually translated into English. There was, this world was only Atma, in the form of a person. Now this world, in that context, means jis, the organism itself. This is your world, your whole world. Minus the organism, there is no world for you. You are not aware, not conscious. You are non-existent. So, this world was Atma only, in that state of transcendent awareness, in the form of a person. And the Upanishad goes on to explain in its own peculiar way, not very much appreciated by scholars who will find philological flaws in it. It goes on to state, because formerly, purva is the word for formerly, because formerly he burnt up all evil-mindedness, to burn from the root ush, meaning to burn, burnt up all evil-mindedness, sarva papmanam, evil-mindedness. And this is what, in all the translations of the Upanishads, you won't find. They simply say, burnt up all evils. You see where the scholar falls down. Atma, Brahman, the creator, is out there. It's here, in your awareness only. All evil-mindedness, manam, there is the actual word. Pap manam, it's not just papa, which is sin or evil. Burnt up all evil-mindedness, therefore, he, the Holy One in that state of awareness, is called the person, Purusha, from Purva and Ush. And so the name Purusha, the person. Now you understand the meaning of the theistic presentation, God the person. You, utterly purified of all evil-mindedness, are God the person. Now, if all evil-mindedness is burnt out, in which manner are you or I aware of existence? In terms of the bondage caused by the limitations of time and space consciousness, or in terms of eternity, of immortality, of perpetual creative power in action, which is creation, and which is utterly free of all karma. When you or I, when any one of us has flowered out in that way because of which all evil-mindedness is out, then that transcendent awareness, the totality, the one total reality, comes to fruition in you yourself. As long as there is a psychophysical existence, there will be the experiencing of pleasure, pain, joy, sorrow. But it will be an experiencing which is no bondage. You yourself in your innermost reality are in the state of nirvana, in the kingdom of heaven, if you like. Now, in that state, the pattern of life which comes out is the pattern of the perfect life, the sinless life, the perfect life, the sinless life, absorbs into itself all the pleasure, pain of the whole psychical world, of all mankind. Your psyche has grown into the soul of the world. That is what has happened. So don't think of fruition, realization in terms of a milk and honey state of affairs. Not at all. It includes everything. Your karma, then, is the immediate creatively living process of the eternal now. That is your karma. Creative action all the time. And you are aware in those terms constantly. And being aware in those terms, you meet all pleasure, pain, all joy, sorrow which comes to you in the perfect way, which cannot be described, which cannot be predetermined, preconceived. Because who is the predeterminer or preconceiver? The ignorant person. The conditioned mind preconceives. The one who is utterly free of ignorance does not preconceive, predetermine. Because if you live creatively, you live in terms of the infinite, of the unconditioned, the absolute, the totality. How can you preconceive anything? Now, get the feel of this intimately into your life. Let it permeate you right down to your very marrow. Then the working out of your karma as the half-witted man says is taken care of by God, by totality, by the absolute. It's part and parcel of the universal process. And you being free, being man, truly man in the full sense of the term, are the instrument of that divine consummation. Now you see, what is involved in this? That in letting this permeate your whole being, all self-orientation is completely out. All ordinary selfishness is completely out, burnt out, the evil-mindedness. The illusion of unselfishness, which we set up for ourselves by identifying ourselves with the cause of God or totality or the perfect or the wonderful, all that humbug is out. And of course the more serious forms of it, where people suffer from messianic complexes and all sorts of completely lunatic illusions about being God and all the rest of it. All that is out. You are utterly sane for the first time. We are all a little bit less than sane as we are until that consummation. Also, instead of an isolative self-conscious I attempting to live my life, the totality lives through this unhindered, unstopped. The mind is utterly pure, utterly transparent. The unresisting, the infinitely resilient focus through which transcendence works unhindered. This is man's destiny. This is what is meant by saying one is a man, the creative thinker. Creative power in endless creative action. Now try and relate this to what we might call brass tacks. We as we are always concerned with ourselves. Our little problems, our sorrows, the fulfillment of our ambitions, our children's well-being and success and happiness and all the rest of it. I'm not speaking derogatorily of these things. This is all perfectly natural. It has its natural, its proper place in our life, unquestionably. But if I am aware, if I am conscious and I live in terms of a limited view upon the totality, I will inevitably introduce mistakes and conflict. It's impossible to avoid it. It is not I who can bring anything to fulfillment or fruition. It is life. It is this creative power which is pure mind, the energy of transcendence itself, the immeasurable, the inconceivable, which lives through this, maintains it, and when it becomes too obstructive, disrupts it and says, out, I must have another to work through. So now, how shall we approach the actual everyday problems which have to be attended to, of course? tiny little babies have to be washed and fed and clothed and all the rest of it. Not so tiny babies have to be sent off to school and whatnot and whatnot. The bread has to be brought home and all the rest of it. The everyday business, with all its everyday complications and problems. Because remember, even if I am the perfected Holy One, I am not the only pebble on the human beach. There are 3,500 million others at least. And so problems and complicated situations are bound to be there. But how shall I approach the situation? Shall I care for my child in the sense of my child and I want all the nicest and the best for it? Or here is an embodiment of transcendence which can possibly flower out through that being. If my mind and heart are really free of all possessiveness, are really free of the almost crime of trying to fulfill myself through my child, the things that I failed to do and become and so forth, my ambitions and all the rest of it. If I can be totally free of selfness in the approach, if I can also be free of all the illusory pictures which the pious devotee, but not very sound in the head, raises up, you know, about, oh, God will take care of him. Oh, Lord God, please do look after my child. And then, of course, I give God a long shopping list of all the lovely things I want God to do for my child. You see, I, an ordinary human being, am an idiot. But when I really see it, and don't say it out of a mock modesty or merely because of intellectual jugglery, intellectual knavery, but I really see it, then the wisdom of God functions freely through this poor little fellow. And the right thing happens for that child. Now, this is an act of faith. It may suffer, things may go wrong, but the right thing is happening as far as I am an instrument for such happening involved in that child's life. See, these little words, selflessness and so forth, and allied words, they are little words, and we have no vision whatever about the tremendousness of their meaning. The body is derived from the animal, and we inherit the whole of the animal heritage because the body has evolved out of the animal. The whole of that animal heritage. And some of the strongest elements in it are related to isolatedness. The animal is concerned with the preservation of itself and of the species. The preservation of the species, it never needs to bother about. In season, the right thing happens, and the species goes on. But for the preservation of itself, it has to be on the alert, it has to fight, and so forth. It never gets out of this dualistic realm of conflict. But for man, there is something else. something which is the very contrary of the law of the animal. But it is a strange sort of contrary. It is not a contrary of absolute opposition, so that what is the law of the animal has to be completely destroyed or disrupted or prevented from functioning. No. That is the extraordinary part of transcendence. The law of the animal is subsumed in this law of man, the absolute commands of the spirit, so to say, the absolute moralities of the spirit. And in that subsuming, the energies which functioned in the animalish way are all transmuted into the angelic way, the divine way, in man. But for that we have to be prepared to put aside all our beliefs, ideas, conceptions, and so forth. Let us not delude ourselves. We are all caught in this trap. I belong to such and such a society, such and such a religion, etc., etc. Or I follow such and such a teacher. Oh, my teacher is the greatest teacher in the world. There's nobody like him. Your teacher is good, but you know, he's not quite like mine. This pathetic nonsense which has plagued the life of man since man came on the globe. All that has to be out. So now the last question which we must deal with is, how is it going to be out? I use the term it's going to be out, but it never is out. It is transformed. It is me, myself. Our instrument of salvation is our power of attention. One can never repeat this too often. It needs constant repetition to ourselves every day. The power of attention. To what shall we attend? To the transcendent? Try it, you can't. You can't pay attention to that which is immortal, eternal, infinite, absolute, dimensionless, immeasurable as an object of attention. It's totally impossible. So what can you attend to? Yourself. Which means that which is happening now in this perturbed, distorted, confused, cloudy way. And in that attending, the mists dissipate and there is light. The positive part of all our spiritual work is the negative task of clearing out the dirt. It's not of acquiring that which is perfect. You cannot acquire the perfect. Then the perfect functions through you. If it functions through me, I will never know it. Except by hindsight, perhaps. But not in the immediate now, when it is happening. Because that's the nature of creation, to be unself-conscious. You cannot know it now. But it will happen. And it does happen through. If one remains wholly alert to the actual what is, and desirelessly alert, this is the important thing. God has no desires. Brahman, the absolute, the infinite, is utterly desireless. Creative power, creative power cannot have desire. It just creates. That is its nature. It is creation and the creative process. And it is utterly free of desire. When desire comes, it limits. It distorts. It spoils. It tries to hold in a limited context that which is utterly illimitable. You will find this in your own living experience. How often when you felt, now, at last, and then suddenly one great sweep and the whole thing comes tumbling down, and you feel, here, I've done everything possible, lived the pure life, done the marvelous thing, and this is what the Lord does unto me. Of course. You've obstructed transcendence with expectation, with desire, with your formulation of what transcendence ought to be or do. You see, I am ignorant. I am in bondage. Therefore I do this. I approach transcendence full of personal desire. So there is no freedom from what in conventional terms has been called evil karma. See? So, pay complete attention to what actually is present here now, desirelessly, with a mind that is completely open, all the time, fresh, innocent. And let that be helped
by the knowledge that man is Elohim, creative thought. For this will be a source of strength to fulfill your divine destiny.